Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, listeners. We wanted to let you know that Heritage Radio Network's Julia Child Fellowship application is now open. The fellowship offers an enriching experience for aspiring food writers and journalists who share our passion for food systems change. The fellowship is a great way to progress in the field of food journalism and digital media and will start in early January 2024. This fellowship will provide participants with hands-on experience, mentorship, and access to an extensive network of industry professionals. The application deadline is November 27, 2023. Check out heritageradionetwork.org and click on the Julia Child Foundation Writing Fellowship link to learn more. If you or someone you know has interest in food studies and journalism, this might be a great fit. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and check out the application today. Thank you.
Welcome to Dyed Green. I'm Kate McCabe.
And I'm Max Usman.
We have a very special guest podcast on Dyed Green this week in place of our regular Dyed Green podcast this week. We are sharing an episode of our friends' podcast, How to Survive the End of the World, hosted by Autumn and Adrienne Marie Brown, the incredible writer podcasting sisters. This is a special edition of their podcast called Witch School, episode number 13 with Claire Davey of America Village Apothecary.
So this is very exciting for us because as Bog and Thunder, our sister project to Diet Green, our travel company, one of the things we love, absolutely love doing is introducing Ireland to people that haven't experienced it and sharing the magic and sharing what's so special about it. And we had an opportunity to do that with Adrian and Autumn several years ago. We traveled to the north with them and ran some writing workshops, and we reconnected with Adrian and Autumn earlier this year to run another series of writing workshops. And we were able to introduce them to Ireland and start this really cool relationship that now they have, and they've taken and grown with it on their own. And so it's really exciting to see that kind of come to fruition and have them interview Claire, who is a friend of ours as well. We love seeing those connections.
So the relationship between Adrian and Claire that they'll discuss in today's podcast started in the Boyne Valley last summer, and we're really excited to be co-hosting another Writing the Next World workshop retreat with Autumn and Adrian Marie Brown next June, this time in Connemara. We're really excited for you to hear it. Let us know what you think.
Stay tuned and check in with us next week, and we'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming.
I am kind of what's coming up a lot for me, and this is tied in with everything that's going on for me physically at the moment as well. It kind of sparked when we met, which is really interesting, around the summer solstice, that heightened, that brightness, that sun.
Oh, that sun. Yeah.
And it's around chaos. And it's so at the moment, yeah, I think I'm a maiden of mayhem.
Yes.
Hello, beloved listeners. This is Adrian, writer of stories and songs, witch, emergent strategist, and pleasure activist, living in the land of the Eno and Lumbee peoples. And this is How to Survive the End of the World, our podcast about learning from apocalypse with grace, rigor, and curiosity. When I say our, I'm including my co-host and sister Autumn, who's currently on an international trip with her babies. In her absence, and in honor of my book Fables and Spells, I'm going full witch this season and having conversations with some of my favorite witches and teachers, and also reading you little bits and pieces from the book. What I mean by witch is people who work with elements of the natural world, including our human nature, to generate more possibilities. This includes herbalists, this includes root work, this includes spell casting, song building, altar building. Every witch that I bring on has been a totally new, different experience. So I think that that is something we're learning from here. A reminder, we don't have any sponsors. There's no big funder behind this program, just you all. So if you love what you're hearing, if it's of service to you, please head on over to patreon.com/intotheworldshow and become part of our Patreon community. We also have exclusive content there. Autumn and I recently did a catch-up conversation where we talk about travel, love, writing, everything. So check it out. Now, my guest today, I'm really, really, really excited because I literally found her in the countryside of Ireland. We found each other on the spring equinox in Ireland. And as soon as we were in her presence, Autumn and I were both together on this writing retreat in Ireland. We looked at each other and we were like, we're keeping her. We're keeping Claire Davey. So Claire Davey is an herbalist, a witch. She brings potions. She brings spells. She works around the equinox. She does so much. And she does it from a place called American Village in Ireland. And I am just blown away that you're actually here, that we manifested this. Claire, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's so good to be here. So it's good to so see good to your have face you here. Again.
You too.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you made such a huge impression on us. And it was so clear, you know, I was like, I want to learn more from you. I want others to learn more from you. Our group, you know, we had a group of writers there who were just so magical. I mean, it was a really gorgeous, spiritual, beautiful gathering, but everyone was like, oh, Claire, like learning so much from you. And I think one of our students even came to you afterwards.
That's right.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Tell me, how are you right now today? How are you doing?
How am I doing today? Mm-hmm. I'm not doing too bad. I I've had kind of a strange roller coaster time the last month or so that I can tell you a bit more about as we go on. So in response to that, I am getting different kind of healing work done on myself. So I was at or with a good friend of mine this morning, Kira, who did some kind of energy work with me. And it's really grounding me and bringing me towards the place I know I need to get to. And it's really interesting, and I'm so delighted I'm on with you now as we approach Samhain.
I know.
And it's really interesting because when we met at the solstice, you know, we've gone through this turn, and that's kind of when it all began. It's kind of, I've been reflecting on it a lot. It's really interesting. I'll tell you more in a while.
Okay, beautiful. That's exciting.
So I'm good. I'm good today. I feel grounded. I feel connected to my body, and my body feels connected to the earth, which is good.
Yeah, that's
a really nice feeling.
That's the way. That is the way. Well, I'm glad to hear it. I am coming into this space. I'm feeling also pretty good. It's been a really intense couple of weeks in in my life, as the situation has unfolded in Gaza, it's really uplifted for me and reminded me like why I love organizers and organizing and why it is so important to have people in my life who are educating and who have big expanded hearts and who understand that, you know, we're really at every moment that harm happens in the world, we are, there's also this opening to build that movement of people who want love and want connection and want justice with each other. And so I've done a lot of grieving and a lot of feeling of just the responsibility of being of the U.S. empire. And I'm also really grateful for the community that I'm connected to and learning from and learning with in this moment. So that's been like a lot of what's been taking up my mental and emotional and spiritual space. And then in my body, I'm feeling just this week as I'm talking to you, there's a major pivot happening. Like I have been doing this work around disordered eating and binging, and I'm 4 months from a binge, which is starting to feel like, okay, that's something. Mm-hmm. And now I'm learning how to eat. Part of why I'm like, I have my breakfast here, because I'm like, I'm supposed to eat breakfast. That's one of my big practices.
Eat breakfast
while I talk to you. But it's so interesting to be 45 and still learning basics of existing with a body. Wow. So I'm good. I'm here with you. And I'm really excited to be here with you. And I want you to tell people, before we dive into the questions, can you tell people what American Village, why there's a place called American Village, or why there are American villages in Ireland? Because I remember that when you told us, I was so moved by why it's called that. Because I was like, what is this American Village?
So it's America Village, not America. American. Yeah, America.
America Village.
America Village, Balia Verica, in Irish. And it's, so when I first moved here, which was about 12, 13 years ago, and I started up my business, and I decided to call my business, name it after the place I was in, America Village Apothecary. And I was really, where did that name come from? You know, what's it about? So I spoke to lots of people locally around here, and they all told me the same thing. And then I also spoke to the curator in the Museum of Country Life that's in County Mayo, not far from here. Mm-hmm. And her husband is an expert in Irish place names. So she said, I'll get him to look into it too. And it's as I had been told, basically where America Village is situated is kind of at a crossroads. Even though it's not a crossroads, it's only two roads. There's no four roads. Well, it's not crossing. It's more kind of a Y junction. and one road goes way back into a valley called Glantraig. And then the other road is the main road. So it's where those two roads intersect. And during the famine times in Ireland, when there was mass emigration and so many people were dying, so many people were starving, and so many people were leaving the country. Before the famine and afterwards. And of course, everybody was going west to America. So what they often used to have were these events that were called American Wakes. So for those who know the Catholic faith, or for those that don't, basically the wake is when somebody passes and you wake the body the night before the burial, which is it's a celebration of that person's life. It's they're actually the host of the party. And so everybody is celebrating that person. Usually there's a lot of storytelling involved. There's a lot of music, a lot of drinking, dancing. It's a celebration of that person's life.
Mm-hmm.
So what used to happen before these emigrations or before people were leaving is they would hold these American wakes in different communities for the people who were leaving to go to America, because they'd never see them again.
That's right.
So it was like a living funeral for those people, basically. So this, it was at this intersection, this in the road, that the American wakes used to take place. And that's where the name America Village then comes from. Mm-hmm. And there's a few of them in Ireland. But yeah, it's also interesting because it does predate the big famine that was here as well. You know, so it was ongoing even before then.
I always get so fascinated by our species and how, you know, how normal now it feels to be able to travel, to go between places if you have a certain level of privilege, if you have a certain level of capacity, but that there are still people who are making the one-way journey or a journey that might be one way, and just how all of these times layer over each other, right? Mm. It's amazing to me. Thank you for sharing that. And my first question is, you know, I'm calling this witch school and I'm talking about witch season, but how do you identify the work you do? Like, do you walk around like I'm a witch, or do you use other language for yourself?
I always kind of struggle with labels. and, you know, I was thinking about this question and because I've always struggled with, like, what am I? What do I do? You know, because I do lots of things.
You do so.
And identities, you know, I see it as, I guess I see myself as being quite fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look more deeply into that, I guess, you know, putting a name on myself, I think it's to do with an aversion or some kind of, it's to do with attachment.
Uh-huh.
For one, I don't want to attach myself to one particular thing.
Yep.
And also it's to do with time, because I guess I'd see myself, you know, not linear, that it's an ever evolving, I'm evolving all the time,
all
you know?
Time.
So whereas I see one attachment kind of being suspended in a time,
mm-hmm.
Or one label or a label or so. But I guess for the moment, what I am kind of, what's coming up a lot for me, and this is tied in with everything that's going on for me physically at the moment as well, it kind of sparked when we met, which is really interesting, around the summer solstice, that heightened, that brightness, that sun.
Oh, that sun. Yeah.
And it's around chaos. And it's, so at the moment, I think I'm a maiden of mayhem.
I
call myself that for now.
I love that.
Yeah.
The maiden
inside
of mayhem.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
That resonates.
Yeah. Mayhem. Maidens of mayhem,
maidens of mayhem,
what our world needs right now.
I agree with you. When did you realize that you were drawn to the work that you do? I know that there's so much inside your mayhem and so much inside your offer. But when did you feel drawn to, I know that there's the apothecary, I know that there's spell work, song work. When did you feel called?
I suppose it all started when I was a child. When I was born in Yorkshire, I wasn't born here in Ireland. I was born in Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. My parents traveled a lot. Mm-hmm. My father's people were gypsies. Mm-hmm. So I think it, my mom's weren't. But he really struggled with staying in one place mm-hmm. for any length of time. So we moved around a lot. And when I was about those real informative kind of years, I guess, between 4 and 8, or we spent a lot of time in Cornwall, and we lived on a boat, we lived in a bus, we lived in a converted barn. But all the time that we were moving, I had this stability of my parents and their love.
Yeah.
But also my mother and my grandmother would have always kind of had this strong connection with nature.
Uh-huh.
With plants. And then because of the kind of world we were living in and moving in, it was full of hippies, you know, it was full of, so we'd go to, I remember being in houses and women would be spinning wool at the wheel and they'd, mm-hmm. you know, they'd be, so I was exposed to all that. When we lived on the boat, this big boat came in, it was called Free, and it was traveling around the world full of hippies. And my dad wanted us to, you know, try his best for us to move onto the boat and go to South America. But my mom was having none of it. She put her foot down. Yeah. But just, I got to play with all these adults and children who were also kind of nomadic, I guess. Mm-hmm. From that stage, I got this grounding, I think, this real sense of connection with the elements.
Uh-huh.
With being outdoors, with the sea, with the wind, with the land. You know, we'd walk across fields to get to school. So I think that was the beginning of it. But then I kind of was like, yeah, I'll put that in a little box now. Now I'm a teenager, you know, and it was just all left. And I pursued then work in, I went to drama college for a couple of years. And then I came to Ireland when I was just 18. I kind of ran away here. Then I pursued more activism work, more social kind of community work, and I got heavily involved in that that kind of work. I went to college and I studied community work, and I was drawn into that work. And then it was when I moved here, about 13 years ago now, something like that. And I moved here to move in with my then boyfriend, who's my partner. We have two children now, whose families, he's 7 generations here. So I added an 8th, and both my children with Michael were born here at home as well in America Village. So I know I'm here for a reason.
Oh yeah.
The place brought me here. As soon as I got here, the box that had been closed for so long burst open.
Wow.
And I started to work with the land again, with the elements. So it's since then I've really kind of, it's been my work. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Since then.
I love that. And I love it feels like there's a lot of, you know, the land calling you, place calling you, some intuition calling you, some legacy in there.
Beloved survivors, it's autumn. Wow, I've been loving this witch season. I trust that you have too, because it's just excellent. I'm still on sabbatical for a few more months, but Adrian and I did just drop a new Patreon exclusive episode over at patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. And it's a voice memo conversation that we recorded over the course of a few weeks. So if you love me and miss hearing my voice, if you love our show enough to listen to Adrian and I talk about new love, about aging, about roaches and utopias, you can head over to our Patreon and become a patron at any level. And you'll get immediate access to this most recent exclusive episode, as well as our collection of show merch, all of the Ask Us Anything episodes that we've made, and a forthcoming virtual live show that we're planning. All of it is yours. I miss you. Adrian and I thank you for your support. We love you. Yeah, and go to patreon.com/endoftheworldshow to check out all the juiciness. Okay, talk soon.
Do you have any ancestors in your witch lineage that you would claim? Like, either formally, you know, that mm-hmm. since you started to turn and face, is there someone who you've been like learning from or learning that methodology? Mm-hmm. Or do you feel like it's really been, yeah, an informal discovery process for you?
The main lineage, I've had lots of teachers that have come into my life and come out, you know, including yourself, including Autumn, people who I'd been meeting with, and then more formal teachings. But the lineage that I would very much identify with is Celtic cosmology, really, particularly the calendar, the wheel of the year. The other world aspect, and the main deity within that would be the Calliope, who I'd really identify with and use that lineage. It's interesting, you know, we have so Celtic cosmology, we have everything that we have written down was actually written by Christians.
Oh, interesting. About
So we have mm-hmm. no, we have, even though there's an awful lot of that vernacular meaning written within the Irish language, history there, it was all written by, so the Book of Kells, it was all written in monasteries, by monks or by bards or the Fili, which would have been known as the Fili, the poets in pre-Christian times were often employed to write those works as well. Okay. So everything that we read about pre-Christian Ireland was actually written by Christ. So that's the reason I'm saying that, I guess, is it's just really important to acknowledge that and to know, to remember that. But having said that, we do know a lot based on archaeology, you know, and we know that, you know, in megalithic times, you know, times of Newgrange, which I know you went to visit when you were here for the Solstice, there were these rituals and there were these beliefs. There were the, you know, the alignment with the stars, the alignment with the moon, everything was built in alignment. Everything was measuring something. You know, they were astronomers.
Yeah.
They were really connected with the sky, the moon, the stars, the planets, the sun.
Yeah.
And all of those elements are still there. You know, they're still guiding us. One of the other key teachings in that lineage as well is, you know, around the wheel of the year, but the darkness. So we're approaching Samhain now, which is next week. I love this time of the year. So I'm just a week. It's my birthday as well. A week out from my birthday.
Blessed be.
So I'll be 50 next Friday.
Happy birthday.
Really, thank you. Really entering this this dark half of the year. And you know, our ancestors believe that everything began in darkness. Darkness always precedes light. And it's so important that the dark and light are balanced, which they're not in our world today.
Not at all.
You know, all birth is preceded by chaos as well, which was also a belief in Celtic cosmology. And the wheel of the year, it begins. So the Celtic New Year is Halloween, it's Samhain. Three nights and 3 days. And each of the stations on the wheel are 3 nights and 3 days. And we begin life, we begin the year in darkness. And there's something so that just strikes such a chord with me in regard to that, and something around, you know, sacrifice and chaos. The chaos isn't bad. You know, it's not a bad thing. We often fear chaos, you know, but it's where change happens. It's that liminal time. It's where creativity and evolution happens. And I think, you know, our world is in that space right now, in that liminal space of chaos and mayhem. Yes. But I also think it's something that we're terrified to talk about. You know, I think sacrifice doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Yeah.
We have to sacrifice things. We have to look at it in a way that it's given something up in the service of evolution.
Oh, wow.
To something better.
Yes.
We're moving, you know, we have to set before we can move on to something better. And these are all key beliefs in Celtic cosmology. Especially around the wheel of the year, and then it's, you know, it's all the dark half of the year that we're moving into is the feminine half of the year. The masculine half then is the bright half of the year. And you know, all these teachings, the more I learn, you know, from whatever lineage you look towards, they're all saying the same thing.
Yeah,
you know,
there's so much alignment.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I think this is one of the things that always humbles me most in my humanity is when I meet someone who's like, here's a whole other system that you didn't know about. And inside that system, you can hear the echoes of things you believe. And then I'm like, okay, there's something larger always unfolding than the small piece of the puzzle that I can see or that I can touch. And that actually settles my system so much inside the chaos, right? So, you know, in a given day, right, what are all the ways that you're doing the work that you're doing, that fluid, witchy, Kaliach work?
So it, it varies. It varies from day to day. It varies throughout a day. One of the main ways that I would work is, and I'm kind of moving away from it now a little more, but moving away from it, moving away from it through a particular medium, I guess. So it's through connecting people with nature. So my work around the apothecary work, let's say, is what I like to do is really connect people to nature, but when they're not expecting it.
As someone who's experienced that, I know it's, yes, you're good at that.
So, and through a sensual way. Yeah. So through the senses, through, so it's kind of seep it into people like they're a sieve, you know?
Yeah.
So through taste, through flavor, through smell, working with plants to create to create elixirs, to create syrups, to distill plants, to create flavorful liquid drinks. Yeah. So that's one area that I would work in. And
I have to tell you, like, we were like, you know, there was almost no conflict during our week except when it came to fighting over who got the leftover elixir. And then all of a sudden I was like, I want it. Yeah, it's really, I mean, you make delicious things.
So that's one way. And then, and I'm shifting away from that a little bit because I just, it used to be what I did 80% of my time. Whereas now I think the world needs me to do other stuff right now. The way I'm working now, I guess it's more using the Kalyuk. And so the Kalyuk is the old crone in Irish, in Celtic cosmology. She's the, you know, she's the wise woman who's lived a life, who has seen things, who has learned so much, and she will not indulge you or your fantasies. She'll cut you to the bone and tell you what you need to do. It's like, get your shit done,
you know?
And she takes no prisoners. She's like Kali.
Yeah.
And in fact, this is something I wonder as well. So I this new course on my website now, the Kalyuk, it's a ritual. And I mentioned this in that I must do more research to see, is the deity, is that where the Kalyuk comes from? You know, what connections may be there.
Yeah.
But anyway, she's the tough love mother energy. She's and very much I feel as well at this stage in my life, as I'm getting older, as I'm, you know, as I'm turning corners, as I'm going through transitions, I can identify with her more and more and more.
Yeah.
That it's like, you know, I've just like stop the bullshit now, you know. This is not what we need, you know. So that line of activism, kind of eco-feminism, doing work with land, but in that way, and trying to inspire people, I guess, to make a change. To, you know, there's one thing that I'm going off on a bit of a tangent now, I guess, but
yes, go on it.
Yeah, you know, the there's a kind of a Celtic revival going on at the moment, a little bit. You know, around the Wheel of the Year and different practices and Celtic cosmologies and which is great, but it's really the world of stories is so important. Stories are what we are. But the world oftentimes of mythology and it can be so seductive. We can get so comfortable there.
Yeah,
you know. Without moving.
Yeah.
without, you know, we can drop into that world and never leave it, because that's right. There's so much. It's so rich. It's so seductive. It's so attractive. So I guess what I'm doing a little bit is using that as a hook to then hopefully the people will get a little bit more active and engaged, and which I know people are, you know, there's a movement. There is definitely there's a movement happening, which really, you know, my heart explodes when I think about that. You know, there's so much, there's so much darkness. Mm-hmm. There's so much mayhem, there's so much chaos, but amongst it and amidst it all, there's still this alignment of love, of strength, of power. And I do think that that's what's going to save us.
Yeah, you know, as you were speaking, I was just thinking of the birthing process and how all life comes from the dark, and at first it's so small, you know, that when you're I do my work as a doula with someone, it's like, okay, now you've got a lima bean, now you've got you know, an avocado instead of whatever, but so small for so long, and it's like, that's not that, how could that become something that's going to live, right? How can that become something that could stand on its own? But it's only through that time in the darkness where there's a lot of mystery and a lot of not knowing and a lot of, it's like, we can't see necessarily everything that's happening, but the miracle is unfolding. And I always think about,
it's good for us not to be able to see, I think, because I think we've got necessary. So attuned to, we need to see everything, and we don't.
We don't. And I think actually when we can't, we feel so much more. And I've been really leaning into that in this period of history. When I look at things, I'm like, it's not making sense. I don't see a way forward. I don't see how we're going to get there. But if I close my eyes and I feel, I can feel a sustaining energy, a sustaining energy of light. Right. And I'm like, it's going to be, you can't imagine it. It's beyond your imagination, but that doesn't mean it's not very real and already unfolding. So I really appreciate that, Claire. Is there anything else you want to share about how you're doing the work you do?
Then
and maybe who are you doing this work with?
Around the taste and flavor, and that connecting people with nature, that's kind of piecemeal at the moment. You know, people might contact me and ask me to do various things, and that's how I'm doing that work. The other work around the Kalyuk, and that's ritual work as well. I'm doing that online at the moment, just as an online offering. And then the other work, I guess, I'm doing at the moment is on myself. And that's to do with this. So soon after we first met at the solstice, which is the pinnacle of the masculine energy in the Celtic wheel. So what that means is it's all about... It's the bright half of the year. It's about putting yourself out there. It's about doing, showing yourself to the world. And, you know, this is what most of, nearly everybody actually lives in this half of the world, or this half of the year, all the time. It's like, you know, in winter, people want to go to the sun. Because they don't want to be in the darkness. People don't want people, and we're forced into that do what, you know, productivity. And it's not healthy to live this way constantly, 12 months of the year. And these are the teachings of the, exactly, of the Celtic wheel. It's that, we definitely need to have that, but we also need to have the balance of that dark half that we're now moving into, which is about being, not doing. It's about, you know, just death, darkness, surrender. Yeah. It's about that surrender, and it's an active waiting. And I think that's actually where we need to nearly have more of that at the moment before we reach the balance. But that's what we need. But anyway, since the solstice, this notion of chaos and mayhem really kind of overtook me. It was there. And I was thinking about it all the time. Then I was hearing things, and it was just,
wow,
it was coming at me from all angles. And I was just, oh yeah, that's interesting, you know? But then I started getting these, I get headaches anyway, but I started getting these bad headaches, and I was getting like this headache that just went on. And it was soon after the solstice that I also started getting this kind of balance, you know, like not vertigo, but more like stepping onto dry land after coming off a boat kind of thing. Uh-huh. You know, this sense of, which I ended up 8 days in hospital. All the tests. Yeah, I got all the tests, MRIs, brain, heart, the full, and everything. Thank God. Thanks be to God, everything was fine. Nothing was, and their prognosis was, it's migraines, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then
I had a similar thing happen to me a couple of years ago. I had this massive headache that sent me into the ER. I thought I was having a stroke.
Yes, and they thought it was a mini stroke.
I thought it was a stroke. They thought it was
my right arm.
Like, everybody
arm
was like,
numb.
What's going on? Yeah, I was feeling sharp pains all down the side and everything. Yeah. And then they got in, they were like, it's a migraine. It's the first one. They were like, this is an ice pick headache. But then after that, now I know that it's literally like when my system is overloaded and too much has come in, and then the world starts to seem too bright. And I have to, because I start to feel things throughout my body as if something is malfunctioning. But if I don't remember, then I'm like, it's a heart attack. And then I'm like, no, close your eyes, cover your eyes, see if that impacts it. And if that does, then I know I need to get in the darkness.
Yeah.
And I will be okay. But
but
I think it's because so much is moving in the world. And if you can feel it, you can get it's an overwhelming amount of energy and change and chaos.
And I went the first session I went to with Kira, it's like she was just holding my feet, really. Yes. She didn't move, you know. And it was after that, it was like I was saying to Michael, like something has shifted. I don't know what it is, but something. And the more I thought about it, and then it came to me so clearly that I was embodying the mayhem and the chaos. It was like it had seeped in. And it was, and as soon as it was like a light bulb moment, I was like, wow, because it was from the time it was from as well.
Wow.
And as soon as I realized that and kind of accepted that, this is, you know, it's this, you have to go through this. You have to go, you know, accept that this is where you're at right now, and you have to go through this this chaos, this transformation. It's all part of it. And I felt much better since.
Wow. I mean, so it does help to accept, right? Just be like, oh, this is the medicine that's moving through me right now.
Yeah.
Because even sometimes I'm like, that being versus doing, I think so often I'm like, how do I turn this into a lesson, or how do I turn this into an offer? And I keep getting the wisdom of like, just be right now. It's a time to just be. And you have produced enough things in the world right now. You need to be, and the you are a channel. So just be, and whatever is supposed to come through will come through. And there's an obedience. Maybe you know what I mean by this. Like there's being obedient to chaos, or being obedient to a time where things are coming undone. It's like, oh, you don't have to untie anything. You don't have to pull a string, but if you just are, then you'll be available to what's actually changing. You'll be available to what's needed in a moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's about listening really carefully to that small voice with it, to that intuition, to that, you know, because like that, I'm kind of, I know what the dark half of the year is about. I know what the bright half of the year is about. Yeah, I'm going to hibernate now. Still, I'm doing. Let's do this. Let's do that. You know, even the other day, I went for a walk in the woods, and it was the longest walk I'd taken since all this happened. And I pushed it because I had been feeling so good. I was like, no, I'll do the full circuit.
And it
knocks me out for the day. Instead of listen, I knew halfway around.
I know
now is the time to stop. So all the it's so interesting. I'm still it's a teaching for me, you know. So I'm still learning. So that's part of my work at the moment, is just really listening, really listening, and especially this year, come from Sawana is to really surrender. I've given up my job. I was working in a distillery. That's gone. It's just like,
be available.
Available just to be.
I mean, it's so interesting too, the like arc, because, you know, 2 or 3 days before I met you, two days before I met you, I had done that massive ritual in Amsterdam where I really felt my ancestors come in into the room, mine and everyone else's. I could feel like their presence so strongly, and I surrendered to their presence. And then since then, it has been so easy. Something has been so easy, like inside of all the hard times, something has been so easy. It's just like, just be. You'll know what to do in a given moment. Just listen. But that listening, there's something I want to ask you here. Let me see what it is. There's something about, so for me, surrender is also tied to a kind of trust, right? Yeah. It's like what, I have to trust something to hold me, catch me, like, you know, guide me, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think for such a long time, I haven't had that trust because I'm a doer, you know, I'm a, Aries rising. I'm going to get it done. Yeah. I'm a Virgo. I can come up with a perfect system. I'm going to do. Mm. And the trust flooding through my system, it feels like there's a new nervous system inside of my body flowing with trust and impulse that I also am trying to now figure out. Can I help let this be part of my health? Because I'm so used to being able to, there's a way that I've been able to do that with the world. I'm like, the world needs a poem, or the world needs something right now. And I feel like it's gotten so small, like that's also happening, but there's some part of it that's really small. That's like, also you can feel inside yourself what enough is. Also, you can feel like right now you just need to sit still in the bath. Right now you need to be still.
And did that trust, that sense of trust, come from that experience with the ancestors?
It quite deepened. So I think before that, it was like, I know someone else has partnered with me in a lot of what I'm doing. I can really feel like often if I'm facilitating a large room, or if I'm facilitating a large moment, or even sometimes when I'm writing, I will feel like I am not alone in doing this work, and something divine, something holy is with me doing this work. I can feel that. But that was the first time that I was like, ancestors, come into the room with me. And then they came, and I could see them as distinct entities and energies. And I was like, you're all here. And actually, you're always here. You're always available. I'm never alone. I'm never without you.
Yeah. And, you know, what I think is, I had written something here just in my notes about just around the ancestral stuff, and going back to that, just being and active waiting and surrender.
Actively.
Because I really think that whatever about how our ancestors can support and hold us up.
Yes.
They also need us.
They need
which
us.
Which we often overlook.
It's a mutual relationship.
It's a mutual relationship.
Yes.
And we often overlook that. You know, we're asking
right.
them, but they're also asking us.
Yeah. It's a relationship. You know, I think
and we can't
that's
hear
the piece.
That. Yeah. We can't hear that, or we can't be of service to them unless we're still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's right. And it's been very difficult. Like, I have a whole team of people working with me right now on just helping me to slow down and deepen into whatever offer I'm making. That it's not, I don't have to make the offers as if I'm a fireman coming to deliver the hose. Like, I can make the offers as if I am an oak tree, right? I can make the offers as if I am the ocean. That there's a sense of permanence and something underground and something deep and out of sight that is right rooting me. So I love this, Claire. I love the timing of this unfolding in you and unfolding in the world. Cause I know from having experienced the medicine of your offers that whatever is good for you and growing in you is good for the world.
Oh,
like I can
so
feel
much.
That, you know? Mm. So a question I've been asking my witches is, what witchy skills, magical skills, what skills do you wish that everyone had access to in this apocalyptic time or practices? You know?
I think it would have to be that if everyone could kind of blink three times and then when they open their eyes, they could see the subtlety of the world we live in, the nuance, energy of the world, the threads, the weave, the web between everything. But most of all, that they could see, and I say they, myself, including myself in the, you know, that I often think, if I'm out walking and it's windy, which it's often windy around here, the west of Ireland, but you know, if love was like the wind, if we could feel love like we can feel the wind, or if we, you know, if we could see love like we could see, I don't know, the birds or whatever, then, or like fog, let's say, you know, you wouldn't be able to see anything else. We wouldn't be able to see anything else because
it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Yeah. It's everywhere. And if people could just put on those magic goggles or blink their eyes three times and open them and see that love that connects us all together, you know, especially these times of violence, war, that, you know, and then maybe people would learn how to respond rather than react.
I think that's right. I really think that's correct. Yeah. You know, love is when it doesn't get to land, or love is not given room to grow and express. I think it mutates into this violent thing. I think it can become something else. Mm. And I'm like, I do think when you see it flowing everywhere around you, there's always a move that protects love and protects the connective tissue.
Because it's everywhere, even in the darkest of places, and use, you know, dark in this sense, using that word, as you know, in war, in conflict, in there's always still an element of love.
Yes,
it's everywhere.
There is. I've been thinking about it a lot right now. That I'm like, the inside of conflict, the people who are like, I'm willing to stand up and say something. I'm willing to stand up and tell my story. there's so much self-love, people love, place love, connective love inside of that. And yeah, I love this. I love that.
And
offer,
we,
Claire.
Yeah, and we kind of, you know, from some of those greatest leaders and teachers like Gandhi, Martin Luther King, you know, it's, it's, this is what it's about. It's, you know, and it's being brave enough to surrender to that.
That's right. I love that. We have reached the end of our little window here together, and I've been closing out each episode with reading a poem, one of the poems from this book, Fables and Spells, to my guest. And the one I want to share with you is called The Authenticity Chat, Authenticity Chant. And it makes me, it reminds me of you. I feel like when I met you, it was just like, you're so you. You're so completely you, and it gave everyone permission to be more themselves. So it says, let me not posture, let me not front, let me not say yes to lives I don't want. Let me not use words that don't mean a thing. Let me be fly as I am, no trying. Let me be good for my heart and not my rep. Let me be still when I can't take a step. Don't let me get too caught up creating my face. Let me just love me all over the place.
Oh, wow.
I'm just
I wish you were here. Give me a big love.
I'm giving you a big love hug. I just am so grateful for your existence and your wisdom, your teaching. And yeah.
I'm so happy we met.
Me too. And can people come, do you ship it all over? Can people go to America Village Apothecary and order elixirs and things?
Yeah, some. Yeah, there's not many there now. There's not much there on online now. But, yeah,
but they can watch your course. They can tune in and
they
learn
can,
from you.
They can. They can watch the course. They can read the journal. Yeah.
Yes. Awesome. Beautiful.
Shake these bones.
Thank you all for tuning in and for listening to the show. We're on Instagram at endoftheworldpc. You can make a sustaining donation to the show by visiting our page at patreon.com/endoftheworldshow. You can leave us reviews wherever you listen to this, particularly if you do it on iPhones, do it on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. Our show is produced and edited by the very tender and sweet Zach Rosen, and we are transcribed by Lise Furtick. And music for our show today comes from Tunde Olaniran, Mother Cyborg, and the Bingsons. We love y'all. Cast a spell.
We did it! Oh, that was so lovely. That was great.
Dyed Green is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Dyed Green is a project of Bog and Thunder, whose mission is to highlight the best of Irish food and culture through food tours, events, and media. Find out more at bogandthunder.com.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have any story suggestions, questions, or things you'd like to share in response to our broadcast, you can email us directly at dyedgreen@heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The Comedian Who Ranks Apples Using an Elaborate 100-Point System, The Secret History of Grocery Stores, and How to Eat Your Way Through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.